On Wednesday afternoon, I stormed out of a meeting. This happens sometimes. Okay, I didn't really storm out of the meeting, but I did say, I'm done with this. And I stood up. And they all turned and looked at me and said, what? So I explained how I didn't have time for meetings that didn't get anything done. And that my community justice energy, this was a community meeting, not a church meeting, my energy, my time, which is to say your money, for my time is your money, is better spent elsewhere. And then I left. One of the issues that I have with this group that I stormed out of is that there's no accountability. If someone says they will do something and they don't, nothing happens. Not only is there no accountability, there's no authority. We don't have the power to do anything but make suggestions. So we talk about what we would do if we were in charge, but we're not. I don't have time for that. Any of you ever been in a meeting like this? Yeah, right. That's what I thought. I hope those meetings are rarely at church and they're somewhere else. This committee isn't the only place where these questions are at stake. Accountability and authority. Expectations and power. What promises can we rightfully make? What happens when we break them? This is a personal question in many of our lives about our friendships and our families, about our loved ones. When we promise to care for you forever, what happens when we don't? It's a social question about how we are out in the world with each other and how we treat each other when we are vulnerable and in need. It is clearly also a political question. What promises do politicians make? Are they within their power to make them? What accountability is there for leaders, for the media, for institutions when they fail? What do we do with promises we've made as a nation but not kept? Promises like equality under the law or justice for all. How shall it be that we shall make pledges and promises, pledges of allegiance, pledges of care, pledges of hope, when we know that the world is always changing, that we and everyone else will sometimes fail, when we know we might break our vows 1,000 times? How can we make promises of faithfulness when sometimes we are unfaithful to those we love, to our supposed ideals of justice, of democracy, of mutuality? We are not the first to ask ourselves this question, not by a long shot. In 1648, a group of ministers and church leaders met in Cambridge, Massachusetts, to discuss how the Congregational Church should be organized. There were a variety of options. They could have chosen to give power to a single person, a bishop or such, a person who had all the power and authority to decide how the church should be run and who counted as a Christian and so forth. But they were committed to freedom, and they didn't like that idea, so they didn't do that. And they could have chosen to give power to a council of elders, a special group of leaders, the chosen ones. But they thought that every Christian had the responsibility to be faithful, not just some, so they didn't do that. They chose a different model, the covenantal model. That the members of the local church would be in covenant with one another, that they would make a free agreement to be together, to worship and learn and live as one, with grace and forgiveness when they would fall short. People would be free, but responsible to each other. And that the local churches would be in covenant with one another, independent local churches, but connected. If a church was in trouble, the neighboring churches would help out. It was a promise within and between congregations to have accountability. We will call you toward a better way when you stumble, and we will help you when you struggle, and we will celebrate when you thrive. And also a commitment to authority, to vest that authority in the mutual discernment of people with free consciences. In 1648, in that agreement, they said, this form of church government is the visible covenant, agreement or consent, whereby they give up themselves unto the Lord to the observing of the ordinances of Christ together in the same society, which is usually called the church covenant. For we see not otherwise how members can have church power over one another mutually. For we see not otherwise how members can have power over one another mutually. That is a remarkable phrase. The ability of a group of people to be in community together, to make decisions together, to have power over one another, shall not be based on the rule of a strong man or the election of the most worthy or wealthy. No, the ability of a group of people to have power over one another shall be mutual, shall be freely chosen, shall be based on a promise, a pledge, to travel together in the ways of love, known and unknown, as they wrote in another part of that document. In full knowledge that promises will be broken, that no one is perfect, that we are humans in a human project, they elected to depend on each other and submit to each other's authority in freedom. They chose to make real their independence by becoming interdependent. The argument has been made that although there were ancient Greek antecedents, it was this practice in New England of covenantal democracy that gave, of mutual interdependence and self-government, this practice that gave 120 years later, a group of folks in and around Cambridge and Boston, the audacity to think that they needed no British king, but could have their own country, a country of democracy, a republic of free citizens. They had practiced it in church for four generations. So they thought, we can do this. We can rule ourselves. They were not perfect in those promises or those hopes, and we have not yet democracy and liberty and justice for all. We're not there yet. It's a journey. It is, I will say as an aside here, it is possible that those who kneel for the pledge or the anthem, who do not recite it uncritically, it is they who are taking the promises of that revolution most faithfully. Just as those who continually doubt the existence of God are often more faithful than those who believe without question. But the point here that I want to make is that it is this idea of mutual free covenant, of agreeing to have power over each other so that we might be together, that makes our democracy work. Or without it, it doesn't work, as we see. When our ability to live in interdependence is threatened by hatred, by fear, by the lust for power, when our ability to live in covenant is under pressure, then our democracy is threatened. So we have a task before us to renew our pledges and our promises, to renew in our age of loneliness and isolation the power of covenant. This is our task. Why? Why is it our job? Why is it the job of Unitarian Universalists to do this work? Well, who do you think wrote that Cambridge platform in 1648? More than half of them were ministers of what would become Unitarian churches. Who do you think organized the revolution 120 years later? Who made the Midnight Ride? Who stood and fought and died and conquered in Lexington? Who wrote those yet-to-be-fulfilled promises that all are created and endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights? Who signed that document and who made American democracy? We did that. Those are all Unitarians who did it because they've been practicing it in their churches. Not because we were the majority. We've always been more the yeast than the flour. We did it because we had made a promise to each other and to ourselves, a promise to try even though we would fail, to be faithful and honest and to love one another. Because we made a promise to hold each other in power mutually, to practice democracy between and among us, in small groups who gather, who enter into the covenant, and thus practice the work of the larger democracy upon which our republic depends. Now as ever, we must renew that promise.
Us.
We. It's our historic obligation and our present responsibility. Our democracy needs us. And it's not just about the strength of our republic. However, we also need to renew our practices of covenant because we need to be bound to each other mutually. We need the practice of covenant to be in community. Without mutual authority and accountability, we will fray apart, each going its own way. I read this week about the health consequences of loneliness. Depression and anxiety and inactivity and heart trouble and more. The study said that loneliness is a far bigger health risk than obesity, which we all talk about. Loneliness, we don't. It's much worse. We live in a deeply lonely time. And so many are alone, free, can do whatever I want, but alone. We need the rainbow, the promise of covenant, of mutual responsibility, of returning to one another after things go awry, a promise to care for one another as best we can, a promise to tell the truth. A promise we will surely break over and over again, but a promise to return again, to say, wanderers, worshipers, you are welcome on this caravan, though you've broken your vows. You are welcome. We are in covenant and we pull you back into community, assuming you are willing once again to be bound to others in mutual responsibility. So how do we do that? How do we renew the spirit of covenant in this church where we are called to practice these virtues so that we can take it out into the world which needs it? So how exactly do we go about doing that work? Listen to the sound of my voice. Listen to the beat of my heart. Give us hope. This is where it begins, a recognition of the fact of each other, the dignity and the spirit of each other. The move from independence to interdependence begins when we listen to the sound of the voice and the beat of the heart, when we see one another clearly and make the decision that each other matters to us. In the anthem, we are to hear the children singing, give us hope, that is their line, listen to us and follow us as we build a better world. And the covenantal life should be a multi-generational life where we are together, listening to each other, for the promise we make spans across generations and ages, from the cloud of witnesses who have gone before to the inheritors yet to come. In 1648, those gathered described the covenant as whereby they give up themselves unto the Lord. And this is also an important part of what it means to be a covenantal church and a covenantal people. We might say today, whereby we give ourselves unto love, as a wider and more inclusive metaphor. But the sense of it, what they meant by it, should be the same. That there's something larger and more worthy than our own petty desires and wants. The covenantal church is not the consumeristic church. It is not about getting what you want. It is about traveling together in the journey of life. The covenantal democratic republic isn't about narrow interest groups or what's best for me or people like me, but is, must be, should be about what serves the whole. The larger project of love and freedom and justice. Whatever it is, a friendship, a marriage, a town, a project, it is only covenantal when it is about more than getting what you want, about giving yourself to something more, about entering into accountability with others for the sake of that promise. The salve for loneliness, the remedy for isolation, is to give up our private preferences for the sake of one another, at least some of the time, so that our relationships might be genuine and held in that spirit of love. When you are in an honest, accountable relationship with others in this spirit of covenant, you might, as the saying goes, stop being polite and start getting real. When I stood up at the meeting on Wednesday and was ready to walk out, I was being impolite. It was very un-Midwestern of me. I was being impolite for the sake of my authentic commitment to you and to our promises to each other to speak the truth in love. But it was impolite. When I go to the focus group on how to better brand the city of Rockford and insist that the people in the group talk about segregation as I did on Thursday, I was being impolite. I do that a lot. But it's covenantal. Part of being in a covenantal church is about having a larger vision. When we place ourselves under mutual authority, we are not about being a private club of like-minded people. We are on a journey together. And that journey includes all those who are willing to undertake it, all our ship's companions, drifting here under the stars of the heavens. A republic, likewise, is made of citizens, not ethnicities or races. We know that, we practice it when we remember that a covenantal church is made of those who say, "We will." Not those who affirm a particular creed or who act in a certain way or all like the same kind of music. It is made of those who promise, of those who say, "You are my companions," of those who are faithful over time, fidelity over time. For that is love, under which we place ourselves. Fidelity over time, where apology, forgiveness, and return are part of the structure of things. In a community of covenant, it is true. My life apart from you is not as strong. When I am with you, my friends, I know better who it is in me that sings. I invite you to rise in body or spirit as we sing.
Thank you.
to extinguish our chalice, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry with us until we are together again. It's not likely to rain today, so you probably won't see a rainbow. Yeah, I don't want to jinx it. But you will sometime soon. Remember the promise, not that everything will be easy or simple, but that love abides. Practice the promise that love abides. We'll sing together our closing blessing.